Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hello and welcome to Strong Tower Radio's Good Growing with the Garden Guy with Gary Heilig, Sue Majeur, and yours truly, Tom Majeur. We have our contestants in multiple locations. Gary is at home in Eaton Rapids, Michigan. That's south of Lansing,
southwest
Michigan.
Southwest of Lansing.
Southwest of Lansing, where they like to have tornadoes run through every couple of years, right?
Yeah, it's been surprising. There's a map that you can look at to see all the tornado tracks in history, and surprisingly, quite a few have gone through this area.
Oh, wow. You, as you go along 96, I was totally surprised to see the devastation just going right across the fields and some wood lots quite devastated through those tornado alleys.
Mm-hmm. And you have to look up Augusta Galesburg because it goes down. It likes to rip down that track every few years.
Well, every one of those highways has their own special location. That's I-94 and Gary's off of I-96, so there must be some connection there. Hey, welcome, Sue, to the program. Sue, we missed you last month.
Yes, I'm so sorry I missed out on all the fun.
And we did have fun last month, didn't we, Gary?
Yeah, I enjoy doing it.
We had your wife, Azusa, on the phone, and it was a pretty good quiz there. But speaking of that, Sue, would you have a word of prayer, and we'll get right to the quiz for December.
Absolutely. Dear Heavenly Father, we're thankful for the growing season that we've had, and as it's winding down, we're appreciating the last little bit that we can get and starting to think about planning for next year. And hope that we can still learn the things that you have to teach us and all of the things that you have created to teach us about your love and about your character, and help us to learn new things and have a blessed holiday season. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Hey, Gary, I had the longest greenhouse. It's really a hoop house. Growing season this year, I finally lost the battle around the 15th of November when the frost overcame my ability to retain heat and protect my plants.
Yeah, it was a pretty good year. It was nice and warm. Rain came at the right times, at least in our area. So, okay, so let's get on this quiz. And there are a number of easy questions in here. Hopefully you'll get them. All right, so the first one is, this is true and false. The evergreen tree is used at Christmas because it symbolizes eternal life.
I don't think
true
so.
True or false?
False.
I'm going to be opposite and say true.
Okay. And you said false, Tom?
I said false because I don't think that's the original definition. I think it's been Christianized and that is probably a latter interpretation.
Yeah, it's considered true. And number two, which plant is most associated with Christmas due to a legend about a poor girl whose weeds turned into red flowers? Is it A, holly, B, poinsettia, C, ivy, D, rosemary?
I think Sue and I are going to agree with B, if I can speak for you,
yeah,
Sue.
Yeah, poinsettia.
Yeah, that was easy, because actually poinsettia is the only red plant of the group. All right, number three. Mistletoe has been associated with peace and reconciliation since ancient times. True or false?
False.
I give up. I thought it had something to do with romance of some form.
It's a parasite.
Okay, so is it true or false?
False.
You said false, Sue. What do you say, Tom?
Yes.
Likewise.
Which one do you go with, true or false?
False.
False.
false. You're both wrong. It's true.
Oh, bummer. Well, I'm kind of glad that
okay,
it does.
Okay, Tom, you know what? You might want to sometimes think about going the opposite of the suit because you're behind one right now. It's 2-1. 4, the sharp-pointed leaves of holly are traditionally said to represent what? A, angel's wings. B, crown of thorns. C, Joseph's staff. D, star of Bethlehem.
I think the crown of thorns.
I will go with crown of thorns. I'm going to go against the better advice of the garden guy.
Yeah, well, that's a good move on that case because you're both right. Okay,
isn't there a plant called crown of thorns that isn't a holly?
Yes, there is. Uh-huh. And it looks like a crown of thorns, too. It's thorns all over.
It's sort of a really prickly house plant thing.
Yeah, yeah. Although, if you're going to make a crown of thorns, it's better to use like a hawthorn branch. They have really long, mean thorns. Okay, number 5. Which plant was traditionally burned during the winter solstice celebrations to welcome longer days? Was it holly, yule log, ivy, or rosemary?
Oh, the yule log.
I would say yule log also.
That is correct. Yeah, that one's kind of easy. And usually the yule log is either oak or ash, but oak will last longer. Number 6, mistletoe berries are safe for humans to eat in small amounts. True or false?
I think false. I mean, I know they're toxic or poisonous. There are birds that can eat them, though.
I'm going to go with Sue on false.
That's correct. Although, when you'll start to have symptoms when you reach about 5 to 10 berries. It's highly unlikely that you're going to die from them unless you eat a whole bunch of them, but they are considered toxic. Number 7, the Christmas tree tradition is mostly associated with which country? A, Italy. B, Germany. C, France. D, England.
Germany and then England. Prince Albert brought it over from Germany into England.
I think that's quite convincing. I will go with Sue's answer.
And Sue is right again. She's still ahead of you by 1, Tom, 6-5.
That's right.
Okay, what type of plant was used to create the first Christmas wreath? Were they grass, evergreen branches, bamboo, or palm leaves?
Read that list again.
What type of plant, I'll read the whole question too, was used to create the first Christmas tree wreath? Grass, evergreen branches, bamboo, or palm leaves?
I think
evergreen or palm branches?
I think evergreen is just the obvious answer.
What are you going to go with?
Yeah, but I'm tempted because of where the Holy Land is. I'm tempted by the palm, but I suppose maybe they weren't doing that in wreaths yet, maybe. Although they used them to wave about, like the, you know, when Christ was on the donkey.
What are you going to go with? What are you going
with? I don't know. Maybe I'll be radical and go palm.
And Tom just caught up to you.
I was tempted.
I was throwing you a hint. Okay, number 9. Poinsettias were, this is true and false, poinsettias were brought to the United States by Joel Poinsett, the first U.S. ambassador to Mexico. True or false?
True.
True.
Yeah, that is correct. I should have put somebody else's name in there. What plant was, that would have been told me. Plant was believed in Middle Ages to protect homes against evil spirits during the winter? Is it ivy, lavender, holly, or pine? Of course, you know.
Holly, maybe. Let's go with holly.
What do you say, Tom?
I'm going to say
ivy, lavender, holly, or pine.
I'm going to say ivy because it was in one of those Christmas carols.
You blew
it. Yeah, but the song has both the holly and the ivy.
You blew it, Tom. Sue just went ahead again.
Oh, man.
It is holly. Number 11. You still have 4 questions, I think, to go.
Okay.
You can catch up. The Christmas cactus blooms naturally in winter because it responds to long nights and cooler temperatures. True or false? Now, we've talked about this before, so you should catch it.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I will say true also.
That is correct. That's why a lot of time little old ladies will have their Christmas cactuses blooming, and other people say, well, grandma's always blooms, but mine doesn't. I said, what time does the grandma go to bed? And that usually, they kind of figure it out from that. Okay, number 12. Which part of the poinsettia is actually the brightly colored petal?
They're sepals, I think.
Is it the sepals? Is it the leaves, which are also called bracts? Is it stems, or is it the fruit?
Oh, it's bracts. I changed my mind. Bracts.
Okay. What do you say, Tom?
The bracts also.
That would also be correct. The next one is, let's see, is it true or false? Yeah. You have 2 more chances, Tom.
All right.
The star-shaped leaf pattern of the poinsettia is sometimes said to symbolize the Star of Bethlehem. True or false?
False.
I'll say true.
And Tom just caught up.
Oh, no!
Yep, you guys are tied. And then the next one is, and you're doing pretty good, too, because you guys have 10 points each. And the last one, the tiebreaker. Which plant was once used as a symbol of eternal love at Christmas, especially in Europe? Is it mistletoe, ivy, holly, fir trees?
Okay, well, I guess I'll just say mistletoe.
I'm going to say fir tree.
You both got it wrong. It's ivy.
Oh!
I was going to try to throw you a hint because, you know, most people associate mistletoe with kissing.
Right.
And that's a totally different thing. So you guys tied this week, and you got 10 out of 15 right. That was really good.
Awesome.
How did, what
I'm
sort
so
of.
Sorry to tell you, we had a Ram F-150 available, not Ford. Ford F-150 as a gift, but since you tied, you don't get anything.
What about the beans? Did he ever pick out his beans?
I'm still waiting to hear from him on that. I told him the last time I was in Cadillac, you guys have to tell me what you want.
Tom, you're going to have to pick
those,
a bean.
For those people who don't know what we're talking about, there was a prize for one of the quizzes that you could choose. It was I think it was a quiz on beans, wasn't it?
I think it was.
Anyway, you got to pick out a packet of seed, any bean that you wanted. I'm a big spender here.
That's right. Okay, maybe
so
on the break.
Email it to me or something. Otherwise, you know, it'll be spring and I'm still asking
there
what
you
guys want.
Well, very good. Why don't we take a little break right now, and we'll come right back and get into the other subjects of today's Good Growing with the Garden Guy with Gary Heilig, Sue Majeur, and Tom Majeur. We'll be right back.
This is Ruthie Calkins from Tustin. The Bible tells us that heaven will be the dwelling place of God's friends. That's why I'm so excited about supporting Strong Tower Radio. Their unique blend of thought-provoking speakers, stirring inspirational messages, and heartwarming music reaches into the lives and hearts of each listener, helping them to develop and cherish a friendship with God. If this radio station has been a blessing to you and your family, why not join me and hundreds of others in supporting Strong Tower Radio with a financial gift? They're 100% listener supported and could really use your help right now. You can send your check to Strong Tower Radio, Post Office Box 567, Cadillac, Michigan 49601. Or you can visit their secure website to use your credit card at strongtowerradio.org. Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
We're back with Good Growing with the Garden Guy with Gary Heilig, Sue Majeure, and Tom Majeure. Most of us are remote. Gary is in Eaton Rapids, which is southwest of Lansing. And we also have Sue Majeure. She's down in Kalamazoo. Hey, we're talking about Christmas, and we're going to start off with natural trees. I assume we're talking about natural Christmas trees. Is that correct, Garden Guy?
That's right, like the ones that are growing right across the street from your station.
That's right.
I've been watching them since they've been planting them as I've been coming up, and they're really starting to get some size to them. Yeah, I really like natural trees. And a lot of times people say, oh, that's terrible for the environment. But actually, it's the opposite, because those trees wouldn't be grown if it wasn't for the purpose of Christmas trees. And we've said in past programs, the trees produce oxygen. They can take particulate matter out of the air. They can act as nesting spots and cover for various wildlife while they're growing. There's a lot of good things about them. So we like to go out and pick our own trees every year, and normally the You Pick Farms will open right after Thanksgiving, usually that first weekend. And one of the reasons I like to choose a natural Christmas tree is because when you cut it, it's really fresh, whereas when you go to a lot, many times those trees were harvested back in November, some maybe even October, depending on the species. And of course, they're drying out during the time that they're being shipped and stored. So, and then plus the fact, we make it a yearly family outing when the kids were growing up. And we'd even take the dogs, because they will accept pets at the farms. And we just made it a whole day. We'd take the kids out to eat, and then we'd all choose the Christmas tree. It was a committee decision, and it was just a lot of fun to do.
Well, there's, you know, living across the street from a Christmas tree farm, I've watched two full cycles since I've been here, and it's very interesting how labor-intensive it is. You find people out there, first you've got to plant them, and then every so often they do a little bit of trimming. They have to do weeding so the weeds don't cover the growing trees, and so
yeah, usually they use herbicides to keep the weeds down. They will have to shear them eventually, but the first few years you don't have to shear, and there may, depending on the fertility of the soil, they may have to add some fertilizer. But it's like any kind of farming. There are certain times that are really busy, and the rest of the year the trees are just growing.
Absolutely. And what was quite interesting is about 3 weeks ago, they came in, and within a day or two, they selected the trees. They did selective cuts because some of them grow at a faster rate than others. And and then over the next week or so, you saw pickups with trailers coming up. They wrapped them so that they took up less volume, and they could put more trees on the trailer. And every so often, like,
protects the branches too, I suppose, from being snapped off if they have that little net thing to kind of fold them up a little bit like an umbrella.
Yeah.
And what was interesting, it was almost like flights taking off from Detroit Metro Airport. Every, 20 or 30 minutes, you'd hear the gas and diesel engines of the pickups roar as they come up out of the field and take off down the highway. It was quite an experience.
Well, it's not like a lot of things. You only have a certain period of time in which you can sell those trees, and then after that, they're not worth anything, because they certainly won't last the next year. But the reason why you'll notice that some trees are harvested sooner than others is because depending on the species will determine how long they take to grow. Like you might get a Scotch pine in 8 to 10 years or less, usually a little less than 10 years. Whereas when you get some of the firs, especially some of the real specialty firs, they take a little bit longer. It'll be 10 years, maybe even a little bit more, depending on what size you want, because the average person likes a Christmas tree between 5 and 6 feet tall. But people that have a cathedral ceiling, they might be able to bring something in there that's 14, 15 feet tall. And there's nothing like having a huge Christmas tree in your house. It's really cool.
Wonderful.
So, I got to ask. I got to ask because we as kids never had a real tree. We had this, well, dare I say, pathetic fake tree. Although we love setting it up, and a lot of the decorations, you know, we kids made them in school, our friends gave it to us, and I like to set up the little nativity creche there beneath the tree and things, and it was still fun. I mean, it wasn't like the, you know, kind of adventure thing that your family did. But one of the offices I worked in, they had a real tree. I loved the smell. I thought the smell was terrific. I love that part, but I kind of noticed for some of the trees, like if they had a spruce type thing, boy, those things just would stab you. So it was kind of not so much fun to put on and take off the decorations because you would be stabbed. And some of the other ones, or they were a little more, I don't know, kind of the branches were kind of, they didn't stab you, but they were kind of wimpy. And so I'm like, what is the best one?
Well, and the reason for that is, like, blue spruce is like trying to decorate trees with knives on it. And they're beautiful trees once they're decorated because they have kind of a blue hue to them, which is due to the wax on the needles. But you are punished for that. And I only had one in my entire life. But the others, for instance, you talked about wimpy branches. That tends to be things like white pines, because they have soft branches and you can't use heavy ornaments on it. Probably the best ones are firs, like the Grand Fir or Noble Fir or Fraser Fir. All those firs have straight trunks. They have soft needles. They have kind of a citrusy smell, especially when you bust the little resin bumps that are, you'll see on the trunk. A little sticky, but it still smells really sweet. It smells just like tangerines. And when you have something like a fir that has a very straight trunk, it makes it much easier when you put it in the stand to get the tree to stand upright. Whereas Scotch pine, oh my goodness, sometimes you really had to work to try to get it standing straight up, and even then it wouldn't. So, and what I tell people is if you're going to go out and cut your own tree, be sure you cut so that you have extra trunk, because when you bring it home, just before you bring it in, you should cut the trunk off again about 2 inches, because the resins will tend to clog it up and it won't pick up as much water if you don't cut off the bottom.
You know, with my wife's family, we had never, Sue alluded to, we never went out and cut our own tree. We might have gone out a couple times to a tree lot and picked one up, but their family went out, just like you talked about, Gary, and as a family, going out and selecting the tree and cutting it and bringing it in, it's quite an adventure, and everybody should try it at least once. It is a good experience.
And we also went all over the state and tried all different species of trees that were available in Michigan. But one of the things that you don't have to worry about so much when you go cut your own tree is you want to be sure that the tree is fresh, and the way to tell that is when you bend the needles, they shouldn't snap. They should bend and come back. And you'll see that's the case with a natural tree. And if you're putting water in the base, you could probably keep that tree in the house till late January, early February, and it wouldn't lose very many needles, especially if it's a fir. Now, the spruces, which are shorter needles, they tend to drop their needles a lot faster. And one of the reasons why we want to avoid a drier tree is it's a real fire hazard. And when you bring your tree home and put it in the house, you certainly want to keep it away from heat sources like fireplaces, radiators, space heaters, and heaven forbid, candles. That's what they originally put on a Christmas tree were candles. And I can't imagine how many houses must have burnt down.
Mm.
But also get a tree stand that's big enough to support the size tree that you have, and preferably one that'll hold at least a gallon of water. And that way you're not constantly having to renew it all the time, unless it's a really big tree, because big trees will suck a stand dry pretty quickly. So you want to make sure that that water level is always at the maximum. And also, when you decorate it, you want to be sure that you put lights on it that are rated for indoor use. And before you put those lights on, check it for frayed wires or broken sockets or loose bulbs, anything that could possibly cause a spark that could cause a problem for the tree. And then, of course, when you go away from the house, a lot of times people want to leave their Christmas trees on, especially as you get close to Christmas. But if you're going to be away, you should turn the lights off, especially if you have pets. We have two small toy poodles, and I make sure everything is off before I leave. We've had two dryer fires that our dogs have told us about, and so I don't have anything on, certainly wouldn't leave a Christmas tree on while I was gone. And then another thing you want to consider is don't decorate with flammable decorations near lights. Things that are paper could be a problem. If the lights get hot. Now, the newer lights that we have, the LEDs, they're much cooler and less energy. It's the really older lights that used to get extremely hot, and you have to be careful. And if you're going to put edible decorations on, like candy canes or chocolates or something like that, put them up high, because you don't want your dog getting into a chocolate decoration. That's not going to be really good for them. And also,
and you absolutely should never, ever have any kind of tinsel whatsoever on your tree. That is so dangerous for pets. So dangerous.
You know, the interesting thing about that, in the past, they use kind of a plastic material now. And are you talking about like the icicles or the tinsel that is put around the tree? Like
both.
Along the line.
Both. Okay. When I worked as a vet assistant, the icicles particularly, because they were so easy to ingest, were really a nightmare
for pet owners. Now, we have icicles on our tree, but our two dogs won't bother them at all. We had one dog that, before the two we have now, she would go over and pull stuff off the tree, but these guys don't bother it at all. And if you really want to be careful, be sure that you don't use sharp ornaments at where small children can get to them. If you're going to spray the tree, like flock it or put glitter on, make sure it's non-toxic. And I always like to see where it's coming from, because if it's coming from China, I'm probably not going to use it. So, and keep a fire extinguisher around just in case. And make sure that your smoke detector is working properly. And so if anything does happen, you'll know pretty quickly, but you need to realize that if something ignites that tree, you've got a problem within seconds, especially if it's a dry tree. You can go online at the National Christmas Tree Association and actually see how fast a dry tree will go up. It's scary. If you don't have a fire extinguisher, just call the fire department, because you won't be able to put it out.
I've put it in my burn barrels on a couple different years, and it will shoot a flame 10 to 15 feet high, and it's almost like a blowtorch.
And the reason for that is there are resins that are very flammable, and those resins and the dry wood on top of it, it will really make a fire hot. So something you have to watch out for.
I had a thought. What if you wore some gloves that have good dexterity? You said some of them are very prickly. Would a nitrile glove or some other glove that you still have dexterity and feeling be a possible solution?
You wouldn't be able to approach the tree. It's just going to be too hot.
No, I'm talking about when you're when you're trying to decorate?
To protect yourself if you had like a spruce?
Yes.
Yeah, you could do that. And that's what we ended up having to do that one year that we had a spruce. We had a blue spruce. Beautiful tree once it was decorated, but it was just too much pain. And if you don't have gloves, and you really need to have something that will protect your arms or wear long sleeves.
Something like a rose glove, those puncture-proof ones?
Yeah, that would be pretty good.
Okay, you heard it here first, gloves.
And one other thing, if you have small kids, my father used to secure our Christmas tree to the windowsill so that we wouldn't pull it over when we were small. And
or if you have cats that try to climb it.
Yeah, I haven't had that problem, but I guess that could be a problem if you have a cat that jumps into the tree. So securing the tree could be a good idea if you have animals or young people in the house that could possibly pull it over. Because just think of a small child sees all this glittering stuff, candy on the tree, lights. Oh, it's just like, come over and check me out.
Oh, yeah. And for kitties, climbing the tree, that's just kind of too much of a temptation. And the dangling decorations to play with up there,
Yeah. And, of course, the other thing, you want to be sure that you have enough stuff down. I usually put some plastic down, some newspaper, and then I'll put the material down that I'm going to put the tree on, because the last thing I want to do is stain the carpet, or if you have wood floors, having water leak all over it and ruin your floor, so consider that too.
I think we should go to the base of the tree and look at those tree stands. Not all tree stands are created equal.
No, they're not. We went to a really big one. We like to get a tree that goes just about to the ceiling, which is about a 6-foot tree. And when you put the angel on top, it's just about scraping the front of the ceiling. So we got one that will hold a gallon of water. And you can buy stands at the tree place where you buy the U-cut tree, and they'll actually drill a hole in the bottom of the tree. And then you can just set it right down on the stand, and it'll automatically be standing straight up for you. But once you do that, if you have that kind of stand, then you always have to have a tree that has the hole drilled in the base. Otherwise, you can't use the stand.
Another thing is I've noticed that some of them have, like, eye bolts, or it has an L-shaped bolt, and you screw it in, and it was quite a hassle. I've seen some that have a nice, so you could get a nice grip on it and such. So over the years, I've kind of got some preferences on tree stands.
Yeah, the stand that I have right now has those bolts you were talking about. And there's two on each side, so there's eight of them all together. So you have a higher and a lower one, and you can adjust it to make the tree stand up straight. It is a bit of work. But I have somebody straighten the tree, and then they'll say twist this side or twist the bottom, and it does a pretty good job.
Let's talk a little bit.
There are lots of different stands out there.
Let's talk about something you don't see quite so often, slightly pass by, but stringing popcorn, stringing cranberries, that's the thing to do.
That's fun to do, but it takes time. We've done it a number of times, and it's a lot of fun, but it's best to do that, sit down, watch a Christmas movie, and put it together, because it takes a while to string enough of that to go over a whole tree.
Okay.
And also, when you take the tree out, I was thinking about, like, one place I worked where they, at the end of the season, they took the tree out, but my goodness, that... I vacuumed for weeks there, and it still had needles in the carpet.
There are bags that you can buy that you can put the tree in that'll save that. But what I do is I have these electric pruning shears, and I cut all the branches off where the tree is after we've taken all the decorations off, and I just put it all those pieces in the bag, and then I just carry out the main trunk, and I don't get any needles anywhere.
So you do that indoors?
Yeah, I do it indoors. Yeah, I take it apart piece by piece. And I put, I get some heavy trash bags from Home Depot or Lowe's or someplace like that. And then I just put the individual boughs in there. And then I take them back to my burn area.
Now,
and then I don't have all that trouble with, you know, needles in the carpet.
Now
everything's right there.
As we close out the section, I want to know the secret for untangling light strings.
Well, there is no secret. If you have young people in the house, have them do it. Everybody, if you don't put them away the right way, you have a Gordian knot when you get ready to do them. Normally what I do is I just wrap the lights around the package or a piece of wood or something like that so that you just have to unroll it. And that way you don't have to worry about pulling different things apart. Because a lot of times people are done with Christmas, they just pull the lights off and they stuff them in a box, and that's the wrong thing to do.
So that's your...
I thought you could use wrapping paper tubes for that.
Yes, you could. You could.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a good way to recycle your wrapping paper tubes.
As we go out, how do you fix a string of lights that one bulb has burned out?
Well, nowadays they have lights that if one bulb is burned out, the whole bunch won't go out. So look for those lights, because otherwise you have to check every bulb, and that's just a pain.
It is. Or just throw it away.
Well, yeah, if you have the old kind, like, for instance, we have some of the old Christmas lights you could put up on your house. They suck power like you wouldn't believe. And so I've gotten to the point now where I'll only have the Christmas lights on just a few days before Christmas, on Christmas Day, and after that I'm done. Because our electric bill with those old-style lights was almost doubling.
Wow. Well.
And, of course, you know, people start lighting at the beginning of the month, and then they just keep their lights on. And I said, no, can't do that. It's too expensive for me. So go to the LEDs. They use less power. I don't like the light as much. It seems a little more harsh, but it's okay.
Well, folks,
you know, these trees that you know, artificial trees, seems to me, are nowadays extremely sophisticated compared to the thing we had when we were kids. Don't they have the ones that have the LED lights already, like, part of the tree, so you don't have to do strings?
No, I think I have seen some of those, but one of the reasons why I prefer a real tree is because most of those trees are coming from China, and I would rather support our farmers than manufacturing China. Nothing against Chinese people. I'm just one of those people that want to have the tech
money local
here. And,
yeah, think local.
Buying local, thinking local. And the other thing is, what do you do with it when it's no good anymore? You can't recycle the trees. They just go to the landfill.
Oh, that is a problem.
Well, that winds up our second segment. We'll be right back. We'll be talking about Christmas gifts for gardeners and what you can do outside in December. Stay tuned with Good Growing with the Garden Guy, Gary Heilig, Sue Majeure, and Tom Majeure.
The Bible and God's character are under attack like never before. Here at Strong Tower Radio, we are proud to hold up the Bible as a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our path. We believe the Bible is the Word of God and contains the good news of God's character and His great plan of salvation for mankind. If you know and believe this to be true, won't you help Strong Tower Radio proclaim the truth about our God and His Word, the Bible? To do that, go to www.strongtowerradio.org, and there, on our secure website, you will find a donate button. Click on that and give as the Lord directs. Thank you for listening and supporting Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
We're back with Good Growing. Growing with the Garden Guy with Gary Heilig, Sue Majeure, and Tom Majeure there in Eaton Rapids and Kalamazoo, and I'm here in our studios in Cadillac, Michigan. We're going to talk about Christmas gifts for the gardeners. So, Gary, what is a no-fail garden gift for every gardener on your list?
I'm going to make some suggestions, but I want to see what you guys would like, since both of you are also gardeners. And Christmas is a great time to give interesting gifts, and for gardeners, you usually can't miss. And so I'll give you some examples. Hand tools, or you might do a gift basket, or you might buy a decorative flower pot and then fill it with different things like seeds or peat pots or labels or gardening hats or gardening shirts. Practical things like sunglasses, sunscreen, gift certificates for plants or seeds, LED lights, that one especially. Fancy plant labels, like if you have an herb garden, you can get these labels that say marjoram or basil or whatever the case may be. Or just buy a set of decorative pots, seed storage boxes, soil thermometers, gardening specialty books. Now, the reason I say specialty books is because with AI, we can get all kinds of information on how to grow something like garlic or whatever the case may be, and they give you lots of good stuff. But there are a lot of gardening specialty books like on landscaping or varieties of fruits and history books and things of that sort that would be very interesting to gardeners. Or I had one book in my office. It was on antique apple varieties. And all of the pictures were not photographs, but they were paintings of the apples, and they were just beautiful. And a gardener would really appreciate those types of things. But gloves are very practical. And of course, when you go out in the garden, you get thirsty, so you might find a gardening-themed water bottle for people to take out there. Plant stands. A lot of times we bring our
clogs
from outside. Garden clogs. And then where you can use AI for shopping would be, let's say you don't know what to buy for somebody, and you'll say, all right, I need a gift for a gardener, a man or a woman, say the age, and then ask ChatGPT or whoever you're going to use, give me 20 examples. And it'll give you ideas for gifts for those people. And you might even tell them a little bit about, say, for instance, what kind of gardener they are. You might say, well, they're strictly a rose gardener, or they grow perennials, or they grow fruit trees, or whatever, and it will recommend gifts that would be appropriate for that person. And that will make Christmas shopping a lot easier.
I think qualifying it, are they a beginning gardener, are they an experienced gardener, might also help your study.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, Tom, what would you want if you had somebody buy something for you?
You know, something that is personalized, and also something that is a little bit more upscale than I'm willing to spend for, but I would love to have it. Some of those, you mentioned gardening tools. Sue's come up with some good ones. One of the ones we've already got there. Root Slayer, I was just coming to that. Root Slayer is the ultimate, and there are some other ones. There's, I think you've identified Japanese hand tool, but the Root Slayer never bends. How many of us, how many little trowels you've gone through that have bent and so on and so forth? The Root Slayer never bends. It slices. It has a little ragged edge, sawtooth edge.
You can saw roots with it. You can measure things with it. It's got a twin point on the end. And what it's made of, it doesn't have one of those cheap ferrules that sticks in a handle. You know, the ones that always bend or break. It doesn't have that. It's made out of real quality stuff. And their spades are like that, too.
The other thing.
You know, so you can really
do. If you're going to get a gift for somebody and they really want it, and it, I always say I try to buy the highest quality I can afford, because there are pruning shears that you might use and they bend. And then there are pruning shears like Velcro that are just outstanding and they have replaceable parts. And we talked once about that little hand saw by Steel. It's like a little hand chainsaw. It's probably one of the best things I've ever bought. And it, I think it cost me about $179. So it has to be somebody you really like for Christmas. But just an excellent gift. So, and what people can do too is, and we do this in our family, is if you're going to buy something online that you can't buy locally, you can do an Amazon gift list, and you don't have to have people guess what you want.
That's good. And the gift certificates, literally, they can customize what they want, especially if they're an advanced or particular one. One gift that Sue got me was a harvest apron. And some of these products are consumable. Some of them have a certain life cycle. The harvest apron, I'm ready for my next one, Sue. So,
darn that rodent. That rodent got at it when it was in an outbuilding, and that was not a good thing.
But it was sown, but it's near its useful life. But the other thing, here's one thing that occurred to me, is I would like to have night lights. I'm always, especially in the fall, that the sun goes down way too early. You get home from work, you just change your clothes, and before you know it, it's a half an hour and dark is descending upon you. So if you could find a way for a night light on a stand or something like that, or maybe that's something that goes on the bill of your cap, or you wear.
Are you talking about a garden theme night light?
Something like that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. What would you like, Sue, if you were going to put something on your list? You said the garden slayer and garden clogs. What else?
I did get something for Tom that I don't think he really uses it, but Brenda does in the houseplants. It's like a meter. It's multifunction. It measures the pH of the soil and the moisture and like how much fertilizer you need and some other things like that. And all you have to do is just stick it in the soil and read it.
That's the garden gadgets. I really like garden gadgets.
Because that's kind of a cool thing. I have a garden hat that I got at Aldi's, and it's nice because you can fold it up. It's like a, you know, you can't crush it kind of a thing. But, and it's got a nice, you know, some of these people wear ball caps out in there, but I'd rather have a hat that covered my neck. And so this one has a nice wide brim, and it's got a little thing so it can't blow off your head, and it's got SPF. So, you know, keeps that sun off and the little holes for the breeze come through. You can use that for things like hiking and so on, not just for gardening.
I think I've mentioned this before. One of the things I have is some heating gardening gloves. So when I go out and prune, I can just turn the gloves on and they keep my hands warm, because that's usually what gets cold first. Hands and feet, and you can buy heatable socks too, where you can adjust the heat, and it'll last a couple hours. So longer than I'll last out there in the cold weather, but that allows you to get your work done, and you're not coming in with your fingers so cold you can't even feel them anymore. And another thing that you can do is, if they like to start their own seeds, we always talk about the All-America Selection winners. And this year there are 10 of them. So you can order the seeds. You just go to All America Selections, and they'll tell you what the varieties are and where you can buy the seeds. And this year they have two basils that won. One is called Piedmont, and one is called Treviso. And there's a pole bean called Majesty that won. And we'll talk about these in a little bit more detail in January. And I like this one, tomatoes called Bada Bing.
I don't know what that's an interesting all about, name.
But, yeah. And also a cauliflower one. It's called Moreski Fiorietto. There's a winter squash that won called Butter Lamp, and even a kale called Rubivore. So there are quite a few vegetables that won this year. And there's a coreopsis called Sun Globe, a dianthus called Super Cherry Picote, a helianthus won this year, a Rebecca called Claire. There's a sedum that won, and there's another zinnia that won this year, and another celosia, and a dahlia called Black Forest Ruby. So in January, we'll talk a little bit about why they won and what they look like, and eventually I will be putting up short videos on what they look like. But those are for people who like to try new things all the time. Yeah. And there's quite a bit to take a look at this next year.
Well, Gary, along that same line, the thought occurs to me is that if you're an experienced gardener, you look at their garden, maybe they have them send you a picture of their garden in its peak of its season, and see what varieties that they tend to pick, and then maybe choose All-American selection winners that are in those categories. You can't hardly go wrong if it's a crop that they're already growing.
Yeah, and these have been through 2 years of testing, and they're found to be superior ones, but that doesn't mean that some of the past heritage varieties aren't good. There's some heritage varieties that are just excellent to try, and I like to try new things, and there's some old standards that I like to grow. We can talk about some of those in the future months of what I like to grow.
You know what?
And, you know, there's a thought that had popped into my head about the Christmas gifts for gardeners you were talking about. I was thinking they have these boxes that you can send to somebody, and there'll be a theme, like a box for relaxing, or a box for somebody who likes to bake, or a box for somebody who likes to read, and they'll have like 8 or 10 things in the box. Like I recently got one for a friend that likes to read for her birthday, and it had like a reading journal, and it had a nice relaxing candle in there, and some warm fuzzy socks that said something like, not now, I'm reading, or something like that on them. And a little tote bag that said you can never have too many books, and a special bookmark, and like several things. There's like 8 or 10 things in the box. I bet there's a gardener's box out there.
Well, if not, you could create one. And when you were talking about things that you can put in there, I was thinking about hand creams for gardeners and various things. So, yeah, you could put together some really interesting gift ideas with that theme idea.
One other thing, Gary, I was thinking about on the wish list, that if your gardener giftee does not have an irrigation system, if they have water out there, they sprinkle, you might think about setting them up with an irrigation system on a timer. That might be the next level for some of them.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a great gift. Of course, you have to know a little bit about what you need for the irrigation system, but a lot of the stores that sell those things can help you out on that. I mean, for gardeners, and gardeners are fairly easy to please, especially if they're nice practical gifts that will make their gardening a nicer experience. And just give it a little thought. You have about a month to get to it.
Absolutely. Well, Gary, what can we do outside in the garden in December?
Well, there's still some things that can be done. Believe it or not, I just planted some garlic, which should have been about a month earlier, but that just simply means my clothes will be smaller next year. And One of the things I'm going to need to do now that I planted it, I need to put some mulch over that. And of course, if you haven't already mulched strawberries, you should get that done. And also, now that the weather's really cold, if you didn't get a chance to do a dormant seeding and you have some patches that need to be greened up, you can still rent an overseeder, or you can just take an applicator and overseed. That will sit there until next spring. And also, if you have raspberries, like ever-bearing raspberries, and you don't mind having just one crop, you can cut all those down and clean up the raspberry bed. One of the things I'll be doing yet, I'm hoping to get it done before the snow falls, is I'm going to make another raised bed, because I'm slowly adding more raised beds to my garden, so I don't have to bend over so much. The ground's not frozen yet, so you can collect the soil sample, beat the rush. Tool maintenance should be done. Not only fixing tools, sharpening tools, doing things to your rotor chiller, changing oil, air filters and things like that on your mower. It's a good time to take your mower in if you don't change your own blades. If you do change your own blades, get them on now so that you're ready to go in the spring. And if you haven't protected plants, either with a barrier or some of these wraparound collars, especially very young plants, you still have time to do that, although deer are starting to do some damage already. If you have plants that tend to dry out a lot, like evergreens or things like rhododendrons or azaleas, you can put on what's called an anti-desiccant, which will help to reduce the loss of moisture. And there are some deer repellents that can be helpful, too, in addition to when you can't completely cover over something to protect it. So you can put on deer repellents right now. Leaves are pretty much on the ground, except on certain trees like oak and beech. But if you have fruit trees in your yard, you should at least grind up those leaves or rake them up and get them out of there so that it won't cause as much disease the next year. And so there's lots of stuff that can be done out in the garden. Another thing, if you don't mind paying the price, you can get black plastic, and after you've cleared out your garden, you can cover over some sections or all of it, depending on how big your garden is, and by spring you'll have bare soil and no weeds, and you'll be ready to till it up and plant it without having to deal with weeds.
Absolutely.
So there's lots of stuff to do.
Wonderful. Well, that brings us towards the end of the December Good Growing with the Garden Guy with Gary Heilig, Sue Majeure, and Tom Majeure. Gary, this has been a fun program.
Yeah, I really like the December program, and I'd like to remind people, if there's something specific you want us to talk about, just contact Tom at the station and we'll add it.
That's right. You can email me at tom@strongtowerradio.org. For Strong Tower Radio, I'm Tom Majeure. Until next time, God bless and good growing.